I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people exploring threats to freedom of speech posed by the so-called Respect for Marriage Act and clarifying church teaching on social justice. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. Social justice is a term that tends to stir strong feelings among Catholic believers, often revealing deep political divisions within parishes. There are those who insist that helping the poor is what the church is all about. Sometimes the views of these folks run all the way to advocating some form of Christian socialism. Others recoil from the term social justice. They insist that concentrating on economic issues undermines concern over personal morality. In fact, it's been said that if you hear the term social justice in church, you should find another church. And yet, social justice does have a place in Catholic teaching. Robert Nalawajek is vice president of Centissimus Annus Pro Pontifice, otherwise known as CAPUSA, an organization that seeks to clarify and promote what the Church actually does teach about social justice. Bob, tell us about your group, and please help us to grasp how Catholicism understands social justice.
Thank you. Happy to. Well, let me start by answering your first question. What is CAPUSA? We are the U.S. branch of the Vatican Foundation, which was founded by St. John Paul II in 1993. And he founded us to promote the knowledge and practice of Catholic social teaching. A little bit of kind of inside baseball. He founded us 2 years after he wrote Centissimus Annus, which is his landmark social encyclical. And he wanted a group of lay people, in fact, to take this message forward. And that was our purpose. It grew in Italy, and then the U.S. was the first non-Italian branch, and we started in 2001. And now it's pretty much over Europe. We're in parts of Africa and through Asia. So CAP was founded exactly to promote the social teaching of the Church. And I think the main lesson of what is social justice is, I'd say it's not what you think it is. if that's a good answer, a couple things happen. One, a lot of parish programs, diocesan projects, university programs conflate social justice with corporal works of mercy. And what do I mean? Clothing runs, food drives, building houses are corporal works of mercy, not social justice, but they're labeled as social justice works. And I think that's part of the key confusion. I think Catholics in this country and maybe others really don't have, even from their leadership, a clear distinction between corporal works of mercy and the application of social teaching, which is what leads to social justice. So I think, first of all, is understanding that those kinds of projects that everybody calls social justice are not. They're corporal works of mercy. Social justice really applies to the structures of society. And if I can quote Pope Francis, he observed that the duty of social justice requires the realignment of relationships between stronger and weaker peoples in terms of greater fairness. He said it upholds the fundamental human dignity to a dignified life. So what social teaching does is it examines and proposes the three principles of Catholic social teaching: human dignity, solidarity, and subsidiarity. And those principles are to form the consciences of lay Catholic leaders to go and apply them in society, in the structures of society, through voting, through their public life, through their work, and in their private life. So there's a long-winded answer to your first question, so I'll stop there and see how we're doing.
Well, it raises the question immediately of what's the difference then between social justice and simple politics?
Social justice and Catholic social teaching, actually, there's a requirement for Catholics to become involved in politics. That's almost a direct quote of Pope Francis. Catholics must become involved in politics because, as he said it, politics represents one of the highest forms of charity. And that's something to unpack. And he said, because it affects the common good. And what higher form of charity can you have but affecting the overall common good of the entire society? So, yes, politics is a key way for Catholic social teaching to be addressed, but it should be addressed by lay people who form their consciences on the principles and understanding that there is no political party for Catholic social teaching. It's not left or right. It's not Democrat, Republican, conservative, or liberal. Catholic social teaching, is again, proposes a set of principles which people of good faith can internalize, and then you can debate. And you can come out on different sides of a debate on an issue as long as they're being arranged around the principles.
When we get into the realm of politics, things get very dicey very quickly. There are a lot of people who say that the church should be more aggressive and forthcoming in its advocacy. And then there are those people who don't want to hear about politics at all. And if a priest strays into a political topic in a homily, they tend to get their backs up. So how do you strike a balance? How do you apply Christian morality to our duties as citizens in a way that doesn't get us all tangled up with partisan and controversy and everything else?
A couple. Let me address that in a couple of ways. One, I think we have to be clear, and the Holy Fathers have been clear, the Church does not propose specific solutions. Getting involved in partisan politics is not the place of the leadership of the Church. It's the place of the laity. That's what Vatican II really established, the role of the laity to take the message of Catholic social teaching into the world. And when they do so, hearing specific political party endorsements from the pulpit absolutely is not on. That's not right. But as people form their consciences on these, and what I've observed on the three principles, the prime principle of Catholic social teaching is human dignity. Full stop. That is that. From that flows everything. And the two other key principles from that are solidarity and subsidiarity. And solidarity, basically using John Paul's definition of it, it's not a vague feeling of compassion or shallow distress at the misfortune of others. It's not waking up and hearing about an earthquake somewhere in the world and really internalizing those poor people. That's not solidarity. Solidarity is a specific and abiding and a deep concern for your fellow human beings. And Benedict probably gave the best definition. He said, solidarity consists on a continuum. It starts when you recognize the equal worth of another person, and it's fulfilled when you put your life entirely at the service of others. So it begins, if you wish, with a simple American understanding that we're all equal under the law, and it ends with, let's say, Mother Teresa, where you put your full life. So along that spectrum is forms of solidarity. Subsidiarity also flows from human dignity, and it holds that organizations of a higher level should not usurp the duties and responsibilities of a lower level. It basically says that if a problem can be solved locally, that's where you solve it. The state shouldn't get involved. If the state can solve it, the federal government shouldn't get involved. All issues need to be solved at the lowest common level, because not to basically undermines the dignity of the individual where it should be solved. At a very large level, can a Catholic politician end up with proposing national solutions, if you wish? Yes. Can he start there or she start there? No. The Catholic social teachings really insists that you start at the lowest efficacious level. Efficacious, where the problem can effectively be solved. That's where you start, and you raise up from there to the levels where you finally reach where a problem could be solved. I'd say, Bill, that in my experience, presenting this in the U.S. over the last few years, I'd say I see two fallacies. Individuals of the right, whatever other title you want to give them, they latch onto basically Catholic social teaching's endorsement of free markets, and they draw great comfort from that. You know, that this is a great program. I believe in subsidiarity as well. And they forget about the evils of consumerism, improper business activities, and just the fact that brothers and sisters are in dire straits. Individuals of the left commonly focus on the principle of solidarity and the Church's endorsement of a preferential option for the poor. And I think these are individuals who become enamored of government responses to social problems, and they ignore the clear call of Catholic social teaching for free markets and subsidiarity. So it's a balance between them, and neither the left, the right, or nor any political party really represents Catholic social teaching. It's up to the laity to internalize it and affect it. And as I said, people of goodwill can disagree if they're agreeing on the principles.
There does come a point from time to time, though, when political action gets all tied up with religious principle. I am old enough to remember the importance that John Paul had on the Polish Solidarity Movement and the eventual liberation of Poland from Soviet domination. How can well-meaning Catholics recognize when concerted action is necessary, when you have to actually get involved in politics actively?
I think in a democracy, voting, we should all be actively involved at all times to represent our principles, to bring them into the public square. John Paul insisted that Catholics bring their deepest beliefs into the public square. And Francis is the one that said, again, politics is one of the highest forms of charity because it impacts the common good. Catholic social teaching, back to what it is, it's not clothing runs and food drives. It's impacting the structures of society. And there are structures that promote the common good, and there are structures that help destroy the common good, actually. You take abortion as one. Issues of life, by the way, the prime principle, human dignity, is if you wish, the non-negotiable. I think the definition of family, marriage, focus on life, the prime principle is not a negotiable. And structures of society that support a culture of death, as John Paul clearly talked about, have to be opposed, must be opposed. And in fact, I'd go so far as to say that's why religion is so attacked by the radical secular left or right. If there is a piece of that also getting involved against religion. Because religion and family is all that stands between their redefining the principles of society to whatever they say it is against kind of the timeless truth that the church brings forward. Again, I hope I'm answering your question, but I feel I go a bit abroad in trying to get to what you're asking. Am I covering what you asked? Or?
Well, let's look at a particular concern that is very topical now. The current leadership of the nation, some figures among which identify themselves as Catholics, have taken a very strong position in favor of abortion. In fact, they're pushing the limits to unheard of lengths, even proposing abortion right up to the birth. Some actually proposed it even after birth. A lot of Catholics have become quite angry that the church hasn't been more aggressive in speaking out or taking canonical action against some of our key Catholic leaders. How does that whole thing roll into the concern about social justice?
Well, let's be clear on one thing, and I'm going to quote Pope Francis. This is the quote, "Abortion is murder. It's a human life, period." So that's the church's position, unchangeable from its founding, probably, and endorsed through Pope Francis, who I don't think can get more clear than that quote. Abortion is murder. It's a human life, period. And you go back to Gaudium et Spes, abortion and infanticide are unspeakable crimes. The Catechism, abortion is gravely contrary to moral law. And many people don't know it, but the Code of Canon Law, 1398, a person who procures a completed abortion incurs a lettae sensae automatic excommunication. And then you can go through all of the church teaching. And again, quoting Pope Francis, the church's teaching on this point is clear. Human life is sacred and inviolable. Again, end quote. So I don't think there's any question on church teaching. It's clear, and we can go back and talk about all the way from the Old Testament to the early church to the Middle Ages to the current church making that point. The church calls for legal punishments. It calls for the state to protect life. Again, the catechism. The law must appropriate penal sanctions for every deliberate violation of the child's rights. The documents of the church, the profession of the Holy Fathers, are very clear. Abortion is wrong. And your question is, what about Catholic politicians? Can they be privately against it, in a sense, but publicly for it? No, they can't. Politicians and legislators are servants of the common good, and I think they're duty-bound to defend the fundamental rights of life.
But what does the church do? A lot of people are calling for bishops to withhold communion or even excommunicate Catholic politicians. How does that fit within the understanding of social
justice? Well, you've gone into issues of canon law and moral law. Now, Catholic social teaching is a branch of moral theology, but what to do, that's a question for the bishops and the Pope and the magisterial church. What should the church do in terms of legislators who take part? That's a question for the church, not for, I think, the laity. But I can tell you, I'll give you another Francis quote. Those who are not in community cannot take communion. They are out of the community. They are excommunicated. That's a Francis quote. And in fact, he said in September 21, if anyone wants to look it up, it was in a press conference on his plane on his journey to Hungary and Slovakia last year.
Well, these are thorny issues. There's no question about it. And we all need to cultivate our consciences and give this deep moral consideration. How can people find out about CAPUSA and your various activities?
We have developed a website, and our developers, a great group of it's a Catholic development company in terms of social media. They've really looked all over the world at what's available and have said that our site is the only one that presents magisterial Catholic social teaching, full stop. We don't look at bishops' conferences. We don't do theologian reports. We take the magisterial teaching, which is bishop synods, and the Holy Father's writings, and we distinguish those levels of teaching. So if you want to learn about Catholic social teaching, I point you to our website, which is CAP-USA. And you can put com or org, it doesn't matter, but if you remember CAP-USA, CAPP-USA, dot whatever you'd like, it'll get to our website. And the website is 95% about Catholic social teaching, where we cover the questions you've raised and many more. The three principles are fully covered. We go through the major themes of the common good, the preferential option for the poor, right to private property, universal destination of goods, dignity of work, the four dangers to society. The Holy Fathers from John Paul forward have agreed on four key dangers that they said that are facing us in the Western world. That's all explained in there. They've also said the family is the answer. There's a full session on the family. And then contemporary issues. We look at abortion, democratic socialism, Bernie Sanders stuff, racism in the United States, climate change, the COVID-19 response. We break it all down in there in terms of Catholic social teaching while looking at the structures of society that Catholic social teaching should address, culture, economics, and politics. I point you to CAP-USA.
Yeah, I've looked through it. It's very inclusive. You guys cover a lot of ground. Robert Nalawajek from CAPUSA, and that's cap-usa.org. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate your talking about this.
Thank you for having me come on. And again, our role is to promote the knowledge and practice of Catholic social teaching. So really, it's my pleasure to have been able to join you to do that.
God bless. Troy Miller is president of National Religious Broadcasters. He recently issued a statement warning about the threat to freedom of religious expression posed by the recently passed Respect for Marriage Act. This is a law that codifies so-called same-sex marriage. And given that same-sex marriage was authorized by the Supreme Court back during the Obama years, it would seem like a piece of legislation that's kind of redundant. Well, there's more to the story, of course, and Troy Miller is here to explain the implications of this new law. Troy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
What's the risk in this act for churches, for religious broadcasters, even for individual believers?
I think there's a pretty good risk in this act, and I think the biggest one is lawsuits that could be brought against religious organizations of all types who simply won't affirm same-sex marriage, or to put it a better way, who hold to the biblical truth that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that a family is a mother and father raising children. And so this lawsuit poses a real threat to organizations that hold to that belief.
If someone on my station talks about this in a way that could be seen as derogatory, could we be challenged by the FCC? Could we lose our license? So what do you think might happen?
It certainly would seem that way when you really read between the lines of what was passed in the bill. As you stated earlier, the bill itself really didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense other than maybe appeasing those in the LGBTQ same-sex community, because this had already been decided by the Supreme Court. There were currently no cases in the court system working its way up through the court to overturn that decision, and there were no legislative issues either at the federal level or any of the states that was putting marriage into threat. So when you look between the lines of what is in this bill, it kind of masquerades itself as codifying into law same-sex, and by the way, interracial marriages, neither of which, again, had any threat to them. They put some language in there that seems to be on the surface that you would say, oh, well, this is exempting religious organizations. But when you really read that language, what it is exempting religious organizations from is performing same-sex marriages against their beliefs or faith. Well, that was really not in any threat either. That had already previously been decided in the courts. But if you read a little further down in there, there's this language in there that talks about what is called a private right to action, and which really authorizes individuals or organizations who think individuals or organizations might be violating their rights, then they can bring court actions or court cases against those individuals. And so it's really funny. There were three amendments that were offered. All three were struck down in the Senate. There was an amendment offered in the House. It was struck down. It really would have removed that section and protected organizations from frivolous lawsuits. So you have to ask yourself, what was the real purpose of this bill if it wasn't to so-called weaponize this issue for the radical LGBTQ community?
How far down does this go? I mean, if you say something in a private conversation that's overheard, is there a risk there? Does it affect preaching in churches? How broad is this danger, do you think?
Well, and that's what we're all kind of waiting to find out, and what some of these amendments would have cleared up, because the bill itself only protects religious organizations from performing or really licensing, same-sex marriages. It only protects you from doing that. What it doesn't protect you from is what if your organization has a statement of faith that says, like many Catholic and evangelical Protestant organizations have a statement of faith that say, we believe that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Right.
And therefore, because of that, these services and that goes against our conscience. So what is it? Where does it leave those organizations? That's what we're worried about. Or individuals, who make public statements, or as you said, possibly private statements.
Yeah, if you've got a website with such a statement on it, or what about religious schools and colleges that might restrict the hiring of faculty members depending on their marital arrangements? It seems to me all of that could put you in jeopardy.
Yeah, I think the biggest risk is going to be first for organizations that provide any kind of public social services, family services, adopted services, and particularly organizations that do that in conjunction with government grants or government funding. I think those organizations are going to find themselves immediately in the crosshairs of some of these radical groups. But then it goes on, and again, the language is very clever, very tricky, because it would seem like it would protect organizations from even losing their nonprofit 501c3 tax status. But again, it's really only protecting organizations who would be called to perform these unions, not organizations that simply oppose same-sex marriage, or, as you said, just really agree with the biblical side of marriage. So that's really left a lot of organizations now waiting to say, okay, what's going to happen come January when this law goes into effect?
Yeah. What recourse does anyone have? I assume this will eventually be challenged in the courts, but if you should find yourself on the receiving end of a subpoena, what do you do?
Right. This is definitely an issue that's eventually going to be solved by the courts. I think there's enough precedence in the courts that we feel pretty confident it'll go the right way, but court cases cost a lot of money, and lots of nonprofits are, you know, they don't have a lot of money sitting around to fight these court cases or individuals. So if anybody finds themselves in one of these cases, they can contact us at the NRB or contact a number of legal organizations that are out there ready to help, like the Alliance Defending Freedom and Pacific Justice. There's just a number of them out there ready to help, because we just really feel like this is going to be a weapon used to try to either silence the faith community or, in some cases, to try to put the faith community out of business.
Well, if people either have a problem or just would like to find out more about the NRB and its work, where can they get some information?
Go to our website. It's just nrb.org. That's nrb.org. We have all kinds of information about this and other cases that are going through the courts and things that are going through the legislative process as well. And you can find out about NRB and our annual convention, which is held next year, will be held in May in Orlando, Florida, May 22nd through the 25th.
Troy Miller, president of National Religious Broadcasters, thank you very much. We're in difficult times, and I think everybody has to tread carefully. And
thank you for having me and for all that you are doing.
Don't forget to support your local Catholic radio station. In this time of censorship and so-called cancel culture, Catholic radio is becoming increasingly important as an alternative media source. Our programming is based on the Word of God and the teaching of His Church, and we bring you the factual, truthful information you aren't getting from the mainstream media. Support Catholic radio. Your generosity keeps Catholic outlets on the air, and donations to broadcast ministries can be tax deductible. Urge your friends and relatives to tune in as well. And please, let me know what you think about these shows. Tell me what books you're reading, what media you follow, what sort of music communicates with your soul. Email me with your thoughts, billcassel@sbcglobal.net. That's billkassel, all one word, billcassel@sbcglobal.net. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Cassel is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Curris provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Cassel. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.